Stanford Steve and the Bear is presented by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate's new lower auto rates. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win.
The underdog is howling.
Stanford Steve and the Bear.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Welcome in. Last Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast of the 2021 year. Bear, how are you?
Calendar year.
Sorry.
So just,
I knew you would fix me on.
We will have something prior to the national championship game.
So yes. Calendar year. Upset. Good catch by you. How are you?
Tuesday was one of those fun travel days, so
I was going to say, let's start here. Where are you? Well, we're coming
to your city. I'm in Hollandale.
Okay.
Miami, South Florida. Here for game day in the Georgia Michigan semifinal.
More Georgia or Michigan in the airport?
Fort Lauderdale, come on. No signs of life. Especially this early. Especially this early, even though last night at dinner, there were more Michigan than Georgia.
Okay. All right. That gives us a feel. We'll get to those games later on. Obviously the Cotton Bowl and the Orange Bowl are the semifinals, but we got games before that. Before we get started, I just want to mention a couple things. First, listen to the SV pod this week. We will have a full Christmas recap, what Scott's looking forward to, and possibly if he has a New Year's resolution. That's my big question. He will be answering. Scott and I will be with you probably later in the week. So look for that wherever you get your podcast. Listen and follow the SV pod wherever you get your podcast, and watch NBA Today at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN. And the ESPN app, or listen to the show as a podcast. A lot has happened, Bear, since we've last joined. We got less games, added games, new point spreads that really just jumped out to me as I saw the Wake Forest Rutgers line that we will get to. but I just want to say, like, good for Central Michigan and Washington State and the people involved, and sorry to Barstool that they're going to lose the game, but I'm glad these guys, I was listening to the Memphis head coach Silverfield tell the story about how he found out and had to break the news to his team that they were in Hawaii and they were not going to be playing the next day in the Hawaii Bowl. And they literally were in team meetings getting ready to go to their last meal as a team the night before the game. And that's when he had to break it to him. And to hear him tell the story about how guys just, you know, walked out and went up to the room, tears everywhere, and thinking about the super seniors that came back. Memphis had a chance to be the first team in school history to win back-to-back bowl games. That kind of hit me, man. To hear and the guys that the time is invested. And then you hear that Hawaii practiced that day and then made the decision to cancel is just brutal. So
yeah, it was. I wonder. I mean, I think the Hawaii deal was a real bad situation. And again, I'm not going to put any words in anybody's mouth. But you know what? Like, I almost get a sense that was a lot more just Hawaii not wanting to play the game and the players kind of revolting against Graham, and then, yes, I'm sure there are illness issues and COVID issues, which there are all throughout the world. But for Memphis to fly basically halfway around the world and then find out in that manner just sucks. And you got a team like East Carolina, too, who'd kind of been building and come so close the last couple of years to getting bowl eligible. And they're excited about being in a bowl game. And then that game gets canceled.
And they're down here in D.C., Bear. Like, they're going sightseeing, they're doing all the activities. I mean, they're at the Capitol, they're at the White House, they're down all over the monuments, taking it all in, which you should do in a bowl game, and poof, it's gone. And like I said, the toughest thing is to realize, and you don't realize it when you're in the moment there on that team, that's the last time that group's going to be together. No matter what, something's going to happen where somebody else can't be there down the road. If you do a reunion, I've been there, and I just hope everybody's, I always say embrace the journey. And it just sucks that they didn't get to take the field, those teams that didn't. So my thoughts are with you, not being able to lace them up that last time with your guys. So sorry to all those. We do still have games, yep. Scheduled games, and we got lines on those games. So let's move to Thursday, December 30th, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, your Duke's Mayo Bowl, the Carolina Bowl, North Carolina, South Carolina. I'm not a Mayo guy. We've talked about it, but I will be watching this game. Carolina is a big, big favorite. And -9, all right, so this went down a little bit. I thought I saw a 10 out there earlier in the week. Yeah, over under 58. Are you going with your underdog theory here, which has been pretty, pretty good, Bear?
Yeah, I am. I don't love the game. I just still don't know how good South Carolina's offense is. But again, I would take South Carolina here. I think most people will be on North Carolina here just because of Sam Howell playing and coming back and trying to use this game as a springboard for last bit of game tape for his draft status. But I think it's an opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of excitement about this around the South Carolina program right now with the great signing class that they had, with Spencer Rattler transferring in. So it kind of feels like a 9.5. You can get 9.5 at most places. Mm-hmm. With the Gamecocks, it feels like an opportunity for Shane Beamer and that team to, which surprise bowl team for this year, with the momentum that they've had in the last couple of weeks or so, to kind of continue on and play a good game. And North Carolina has been a very disappointing team, one of the most disappointing teams in the country this year.
Yep.
But I'm sure they'll be excited to play just because of the recruiting ramifications and the rivalry there. But even during the regular season, when these teams would play to start the season up, for the most part, these games were close games. So I actually took South Carolina in those little bowl pick and pulls that we do. So that would be the side I would suggest here.
Okay. I will say this. People have their opinions on Mack Brown. I always think about him in these kinds of situations where he can muster up some stuff to get these guys ready to go. They are a big favorite. I go back to last year when they played A&M with hardly half their roster, and they battled. And Howell was awesome in that performance, and they almost pulled it off. And now this year, I would guess this is going to be Howell's last game. And I think they'll be motivated to play this, knowing there is that, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina, border war, whatever you want to call it. But I also think Mack's a guy that's going to know he wants to use these practices to get better. And that defense can only get better. And I think there's an opportunity here. You mentioned it. How good is South Carolina's offense? I'm still not a believer. The numbers will tell you not to be a believer, but they mustered it up and got in a bowl where, and they won games down the stretch they weren't supposed to win. So I think this is going to be a competitive game. I don't want to give 9 points knowing what I've seen from that Carolina defense, but it wouldn't be surprised me if they play with a better effort and execute better on the defensive side, knowing that South Carolina is not really capable. South Carolina's defense has been good. But we'll see what Howell does. I'm rooting for him. I think the world of the kid, and I really want to see him do well going out in his last game in that uniform. So it's a stay away. Like you, I took South Carolina in the pick'em pool. So with the points, obviously. So that's the old Duke's Mayo Bowl. Later on that day, we have Tennessee and Purdue. I was able to get Tennessee +2.5. I think I got it at
early on the opener. Yep.
Yeah, when it first came out, thinking that there was going to be some opt outs for Purdue. Now it's Tennessee -6. Any feel here?
I mean, it's hard to lay 6 now, but then again, you kind of said the same thing about the Western Michigan Nevada game, and that turned out to be a complete annihilation. Mm-hmm. So is there an opportunity for that to happen here? Maybe. I would still look at playing the over 64 and a half here. We know Tennessee's defense has not been very good. I still think with O'Connell quarterback, they're going to be throwing, even without Bell, they'll be throwing the ball basically every play, yeah. An opportunity to put up some points. And a lot like South Carolina, kind of an unexpected bowl berth for the Vols. Hooker saying he's coming back for next year to run it back. And again, there's excitement around the Tennessee program right now in that offense. I think without Karlaftis in the lineup for Purdue, we'll be able to put up some points. And I could easily see this being a really entertaining, high-scoring game. So I guess I would lay the points with Tennessee if I had to, and I would look at the over 64 and a half.
Yeah, I like that call. I still go back to, I remember giving out Pitt against Tennessee this year and watching that game. Mm-hmm. I'm saying to myself, if Hooker starts that game, Tennessee probably wins that game. And both teams went their own ways from that game and both had successful seasons. I'd be super happy with what I saw from Tennessee in Heupel's first year there. Obviously, you've got to figure out your quarterback situation, and it didn't happen as quickly as some might like. It happens all over the place. Look at what, you know, Utah did to start the season, and look where they are now. And we'll talk about them in a bit, but I like your call on the over here. I could see this being a high level game, both teams motivated and trying to build towards that. So I would lean the over there. Later that day,
Pitt, Michigan State, the opt-out bowl.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't have anything here. You?
Yeah, I would still take a chance on the over as well. I mean, obviously, it's a pretty soft landing spot for the Pitt backup quarterback to come in and face the worst pass defense in the country. And I still think Michigan State, with some of the weapons that they have on offense, will be able to score some points. So I think you're getting a discounted price on the total here. So I'd stay away from the side, but I'd look at the over here. I mean, 55 is 28.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the 31-28 and over. I could very easily see that.
Okay. Sorry. I just don't have anything.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I don't know what to expect. So I don't want to act like I have a feeling on this game. So I'm just going to be up front. Later that night, 10:30 Eastern ESPN, the Las Vegas Bowl, Wisconsin 8-4, Arizona State 8-4. Wisconsin's up to -6 in this game, over under 41. I liked Wisconsin when this first came out. I get in the game, I would lay the 6. I might give out Wisconsin. I'm just trying to figure out and get some more information. I love Jim Leonard and being able to prepare for a team that's limited on offense in Arizona State. I believe their linebacker's already announced he's transferring to Ohio State, so he's not going to be there. It's a trust factor here, and I like what I've seen from Wisconsin more than what I've seen from Arizona State here. So I like Wisconsin in this game.
Yeah, I was looking at an Arizona State. I'm curious to see what they post as an Arizona State team total. I haven't seen one yet, but that's what the way I could see myself playing this game. Well, let's see. You're looking at 24-17 is basically what the spread and total suggested. Yeah, I'd kind of be surprised if Arizona State hit 20 points in this game.
Yeah, me too.
Especially with, yeah, you hit on Jimmy Leonard, and their defense has played well throughout the year. And the fact that Wisconsin had such a crappy season last year, and an opportunity to end the season this year again with a bowl win. Mm-hmm. I think with everything that Mertz has been through, yeah, six is a weird number, but I'd look at the Arizona State team total under once that comes out, and expecting that to be probably around 17.
I could see myself opening a money line parlay with Wisconsin too. Just knowing that it might not be pretty. Knowing what Wisconsin,
I can't imagine it'll be pretty.
Yeah. That Minnesota beating Wisconsin and watching them last night, and I know, you know, not everybody's there, but that's still one of the shocking results to me this year, is when Minnesota beat Wisconsin. I think I say it every week, but that it still shocks me that Iowa was playing in that title game. I you know, everyone was talking about Wisconsin and how they're going to be able to defend Michigan, and they never even got there in that Big Ten title game. The Gator Bowl is New Year's Eve day, 11 a.m. Eastern. We got a fill-in. It's Wake Forest minus 14.5 against your son.
University of New Jersey getting to a bowl at 5-7.
Keep chopping.
Off of the last six games, which have been scoring 16 points in a 40-16 loss against Maryland, getting shut out by your Nittany Lions, beating Indiana, losing 52-3 to Wisconsin, beating Illinois in a thrilling 20-14 win as a big underdog, scoring 7 points against Northwestern, scoring 13 points against Michigan State in that defense, and getting annihilated by Ohio State. That's a bowl team, my friends. And I want to ask you, though, as a player, it's Wake Forest or pass for me, just because of, as a player, you're done. You're checked out mentally, I'm imagining. And then you're being told that you got to go prep and practice to play Wake Forest, a team that's going to want to run about 100 plays in the game and throw the ball all over the place. And you're going to be playing on New Year's Eve morning. And basically 10 days to get ready for the game. I can't imagine as a player being too excited to play in this game, given if you knew you were going there, fine, great.
Correct.
But the way the season ended for them, getting blown out by Maryland, I would think that mentally they're done, and it's kind of a dangerous situation for them too if they're not fully invested.
Yeah, and you're leaving Piscataway and getting down to Florida. I would imagine if there's a choice of watching some extra tape or going to check out some things and some nice weather in Florida, that's going to play on your mind. The over-under 62 and Wake is minus 14.5. So that I was wondering about the Rutgers team total in this, because we've seen Wake Forest's defense get diced up, but you talked about it. How motivated is Rutgers going to be on top of knowing how limited they are offensively? So yes, it's a Wake Forest or pass for me. Early start, 11 a.m. We'll see what Rutgers could come up with, but I would lean Wake Forest in that one. Another fill-in, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. Central Michigan making that 4-hour trek across the border from Tucson to El Paso. Washington State is going to be there. Their head coach just tweeting out, "We'll play anybody we want to play." I love seeing that. 7-5. They couldn't be riding higher after finally winning the Apple Cup. And Central Michigan comes in. McElwain's done a really good job with that offense. You go back to what he did last year as far as gray shirting and sitting guys. I think it was close to 40 guys that didn't play. And Central Michigan is a team to keep your eye on next year. They'll have more guys coming back than anybody in the country. They're getting 7 against Wazoo, and over on there's 57.5. I look at the over here. I know the preparation is not, but I like the capability of both offenses. And like you said, the motivation factor, the defense, how much of a deep dive can you do? I understand you could break down some tape a lot faster than you could in the 90s and the 80s, but both team strengths are offense. So I would lean the over here 57.5.
Yeah, that's the way I was approaching this game as well. It's a lot, I think, easier to have an offensive game plan and just use it, and it will work, and the defense is going to have to adjust. And now they'll have to adjust in game because they really won't have much prep time, and who knows how much prep. This could just be one of those, just let a rip. And it could be a super high scoring game because both teams are offensive minded with the head coach on the quarterback position. So yeah, I'm with you. I would expect this to be an overtype game and just kind of a fun game because two teams that are just going to kind of be really happy that they're able to play after their opponents ducked out of the game.
No doubt. And when you look at these teams, how they're coming in, Washington State won 3 of their last 4. In those 3 wins, 40 points, 44 points, 34 points. And then Central Michigan came in red hot, winning four in a row to end the season. They scored 31 against Eastern, 37 against Ball, 54 against Kent State, 42 against Western Michigan. So the offenses, they have some firepower there. You know, for the season, Wazoo averages 28 points a game, Central Michigan 33. And I know they played different schedules, but I, like I said, the ability is there on the offensive end. I like the over in that game.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
That gets us to the semifinals, 3:30 Eastern. We're going to kick the Cotton Bowl from Jerry World. And I'm just trying to make sure nothing has changed as far as this line. Wow, it's down to 13.5 some places. I would jump all over that.
That's what it's been. It's been 13.5 all along.
Oh, I thought I saw 14s everywhere.
Was there 14 somewhere? Okay.
Yeah, I thought, well, whatever. If you're going to take 14, I would buy 13.5. The over under 57.5, and going back and forth. When it first came out, I really thought Cincinnati has a shot. And going back and watching this, and watching Alabama and Cincinnati, a couple things just stick out to me. And I've done some radio shows the past week talking about this game. And the word that keeps coming to my mind, Bear, is strain. In the strain that Alabama's offense puts on your defense. You saw it against Georgia. You saw it, you know, in the last, you know, fourth quarter against Auburn. I went back and watched the A&M game. They're so good because they make you defend everything, sideline to sideline, and with the deep threat and the ability to create one-on-ones inside the formations and put where they have an advantage on an island against your disadvantage. And when they line up, Cincinnati will be, they'll be ready to go. It's just that strain of playing 60 minutes. Cincinnati really hasn't had to do it against this type of talent. And that's the difference to me. What Bryce Young has done, you know, they're going to be ready. You saw their game plan with Bill O'Brien for Georgia. I mentioned all the offensive assistants Saban hires are for games like that. And then they've been looking ahead probably to this game for a while. And I just, you know, I think Cincinnati will play well early, and it's just how long can they play well? I think a ton is on Desmond Ridder. I really look at him trying to move the chains, whether it's third and six, they got to stay out of long situations. But can he move the chains with his feet to keep Alabama's offense off the field? I don't know. And what the hell are they going to do trying to block 31? They haven't seen anybody like him. You know, people go back to the Indiana game when McFadden got thrown out. That game totally changed. He's probably the best pass rusher they faced. This guy's a whole different animal, and he'll sacrifice himself on runs. They'll line him up different spots. I don't know what Cincinnati is ready. I don't know if they're ready for this kind of guy. So I sorry for the long-winded answer. I'm laying a 13.5 with Bama.
No, no worries about a long-winded answer. That's why we're here. It's interesting because I would normally feel pretty good about what you just said and be all in on that. And again, maybe I'm just reading too much between the lines and the psychology of the number, but I spoke to a bookmaker out there, well, you're not there. You're in Maryland. You're not in Vegas. But I spoke to someone out in Vegas who his numbers actually have this game close like 10.5, and they just figured, you know, we're going to get Alabama money regardless of whether it's 10.5 or 13.5. So let's make it 13.5, and that leads me to believe that they feel pretty good about going into this game needing Cincinnati, which I don't want to say worries me or concerns me, but I just find it interesting that that's kind of counter to what you and I kind of see this game. So in a perfect world, in a vacuum, I would certainly lay the 13.5. But then again, you look at Alabama with the 4-1 score games that they played in the regular season. I think the best play here is Cincinnati team total under.
Okay.
I don't know how, again, I don't know what it's going to be. I haven't done the math on it yet, but I would look at that, and I don't know how many points they're able to score, because I can see Anderson being just a problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think their offense is dynamic enough to really threaten and put a bunch of points on the board. Now, maybe they can stay in the game if their defense is able to control the vertical passing game, and maybe O'Brien and that offense takes a little different approach in the game with the help. I'm assuming the running backs are healthier now. Mm-hmm. So this might be a deal where if they're looking to take away Bill Billingsley and Jameson Williams and those guys, and maybe we just focus on trying to control line of scrimmage and running the ball. So we'll see what happens. But I think the thing I feel best about is a Cincinnati team total under.
So I'm thinking right now it's 57.5. So that's probably 35-21, you know, right around there.
I'd feel pretty good about under 21.
Yeah. So you have that there. And listen, I love what Cincinnati's done. I've talked all year. I think they deserve to be here. But when you go down it, you know, the receivers are good. They don't have any advantages, I don't think, over the Alabama secondary. Pierce is a good player. But how accurate is Ridder going to be on a consistent basis? You know he's going to have pressure, and Alabama's got great athletes, got elite talent in the secondary. They haven't showed up, and to your point with Bama, I know they don't have Mechie, but you're not getting Alabama, the Alabama team we saw against like Auburn and LSU.
No,
this is Saban's time, and his guys will be ready. I go back to that Georgia game. I thought Bill O'Brien was great with the game plan there, and how fast that game flipped, really, when you go back, really yep. sticks out. I mean, it's 10-0. That dome's rocking with the red and black. And one blown coverage because of a key that O'Brien put in where they jumped the shallow cross, and that leaves Jameson Williams wide open, and he does his thing. I love Sauce Gardner. I love Kobe Bryant. For 60, they haven't had to play for 60, and that's what I keep coming back to. What
they're going
to
be playing on Friday.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to just kind of as we say this, like the reason why we both would just be surprised is I just think back to when Oregon was favored over Ohio State in the 2014 championship game, and we just kind of went down and we were like outside of the quarterback position going into that game, like, Ohio State was better in every position grouping. And like, it just made no sense. Like, you know, it's going to take something like completely. Alabama is better at every position grouping. Like it's going to take, I don't want to say a miracle, but it's going to take like the A++ game from Cincinnati and like a C minus or a D game from Alabama in order for the Bearcats to, and then who knows? Maybe something will happen in the game to turn it upside down. But
it feels like I've seen it. And wanted the underdog to be there, and they are capable. But I just said like that strain, man, for 60. I worry about that because you can't prep for it. You know, with the schedule you play, but on the other side, you've won the games you're supposed to win and you're here. So now make the most of your opportunity. There's the one thing I always say when you get to this stage, I hope they play well. I know the time they've put in. I'm not here rooting for a blowout. I want to see a competitive game because I think it'll do a great deal for the sport. And knowing, you know, people love the underdog and this is the ultimate. You know, Mechie out. He did catch 96 balls this year, which still is eye-opening to me. But there's enough from JoJo Earl. I think Robinson maybe catching the ball out of the backfield, being healthy. Mm-hmm. You still got Latu and Billingsley in that pass game. So, you know, and that just gets me to Cincinnati. The you can't prep for all those guys because you haven't faced it. And you could have a plan, but it's for the first time it to be full speed in a game, that's what's crazy. And that's where it catches up on you. And that's why Alabama is Alabama and they're the only one. So that's the way I look at it. If it does get out of hand, obviously the over is the play, but like you said, Cincinnati team total, I think if I was going to look at Cincinnati, I think maybe first half, maybe because you're going to get an inflated number there, you know, you're going to be catching on. And the other thing is you, I mean, they're turning into the Kansas City Chiefs, but you can't kick field goals against Alabama and expect to win.
No.
Now you might be able to cover a first half if you kick field goals.
It's funny you say that because this kind of feels a little bit like the Washington semifinal game where I think Alabama probably approached that game like, we're just going to go out and do kind of the, I don't want to say bare minimum, but like, it's kind of like just slow, methodical, bludgeoning. Like they could have played eight quarters
to win the game.
And like Washington wasn't going to score multiple touchdowns in that game ever. It kind of feels that way to me where I don't think Alabama really feels threatened from what Cincinnati can do offensively in this one.
And that was the idea, and shame on me for not doing the proper prep, but reading things that came out after the Alabama-Miami game to start the year and seeing how Saban said, brought O'Brien in and was like, this is the offense, you're going to learn it. And, you know, where I thought of the other idea where, you know, O'Brien would come in with his different deals. I mean, say what you want about the guy as a GM in the NFL. The guy scored and moved the ball. And yes, he did have Deshaun Watson at the NFL level, but I always loved his offensive mind. And to see that he went in and he learned the offense and then to see it against Miami, it's like, oh, all right. So this is still the deal here. This is it. And then the foot on the gas, it's just constantly on the gas. And that's
all gas, no brakes.
There you go. So that's what it comes down to for me is they haven't seen it. And, I hope they play well. I've seen it too many times. I'll lay the points, the Orange Bowl where you are. I'll let you go first on this one, Michigan, Georgia. What are we at now?
7.5, 45.5.
Go for it.
I'm laying it. I just think I think the matchup is a lot more favorable for Georgia than the Alabama matchup was, mainly because of some of the things that you just hit on with the strain that the Alabama offense puts on your defense. And of course the psychological factor where Georgia had so much on, not so much on the line, but like we can finally beat our nemesis, and they didn't. But I think here you've got an offense that I would expect Josh Gattis and Jim Harbaugh to have a little bit different of a game plan. They're smart. They know that they just can't run the ball first down every single play against this defense and expect to win the game. So I would think that there are going to be some wrinkles in here with a lot of play action on first down, a lot of throwing to the tight end like they did against Penn State in the play that ultimately broke that game open. But I just have too much faith and belief in what we saw. I think the knee-jerk reaction was, okay, we need to completely reevaluate everything we saw from Georgia over the course of the year after what Alabama did. They faced Alabama. That was easily by far the best offense they faced all year. Mm-hmm. Now they're facing an offense, which is good. Believe me, what they have done running the ball the last 2 weeks against Ohio State and Iowa has been incredible. But can I just trust Kirby and Will and that defensive staff to put that game on the shoulders of McNamara? And I don't know if they have the offensive weapons to be able to expose Georgia's weaknesses on defense the way Alabama did. And I would think Georgia offensively will come out and play better as well. I think there is something psychological there with that, the Alabama. And once you hit on that one play, like it was like, okay, here we go again. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. Again, the number north of 7.5, 7 or 7.5. Michigan's a public underdog. I think Georgia comes out and plays a really good, crisp game like they did for every single game this year on defense, with the exception of one. And I think they come out and get a win.
A couple things to add on to you. When you go back and watch Michigan, and you, Michigan fans, you can say what you want. The only game they threw the ball well consistently against was Michigan State and the worst pass defense in America. That's one thing. The motivation factor, the biggest thing I am dying to see is what is Georgia coming out as? Do they got that hunger back? Was this layoff good for them to reassess things and get their minds right? I think one thing that really helps is looking at Michigan win that Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country.
Was that what happened with what year did Oklahoma win that?
Yep.
Was that the LSU year or was that Alabama?
Okay. That was Kyler. And listen, Michigan deserves that award. But the idea of Kirby being able to take those pictures and put them in the locker room and say, "Hey boys, you want to get back up off your butts? Look at what you got to face here. Let's get motivated." It's a different run game than what Georgia has seen. I think their overall ability, you know, when you go down the line by these guys, is where you're going to see it. It's not really a zone scheme for Michigan. It's more gap scheme, and the talent Georgia has up front, I like that matchup against a gap run scheme. What is Georgia going to do off on the offensive line? They got to be better. They got to play against Anderson. You got to think they're going to be motivated to play against Hutchinson with all the love that he's got. And he deserves all the love. He played his ass off and he deserves every accolade he's getting. But what are you going to do? Are you going to double him? Are you going to try and run, you know, some mesh at him to see how he plays that? I think George is going to do a lot of things to try and keep him not being able to just have free goes at the quarterback. They've seen enough of what he could do when he is all by himself on that. So to me, we've gone back and forth about Georgia the last couple of years on this pod, and I have not really given them the benefit of the doubt. Here's your chance. You got your chance. You've wanted it. And here it is. You had a chance against Alabama to close the door. You didn't, but there's that door down the road. If you want to go in it, you got to go down this one first. So you have that. I would think Georgia, seeing them keep rushing the passer, not getting home against Alabama, I think gave them a sense of actually what they really do have on the back end. But I don't think that's a problem in this game, knowing what they could disrupt up front. Because we talk about Georgia having to face Alabama. Michigan did what they had to do. They haven't seen guys like Georgia has up front. So I'm right now, I think Georgia wins the game. I'm just not sure I want to lay the 7.5. This is a huge game too for obviously touchdowns versus field goals because there's not going to be as many of them as I'm expecting in the Alabama game. So right now I'm leaning Georgia wins the game. I will lean taking the 7.5 here. I do think it's going to be that high level of a game with the matchups we have up front. It's going to be awesome to watch. But I would lean taking the points. I think Georgia definitely wins the game.
And then we have another SEC Big Ten matchup with Arkansas and Penn State kicking things off on New Year's Day. I initially liked Arkansas on this game, but now they're favored.
Yeah,
if you didn't get them at +2.5 or 3 like it was early, I don't know if you want to lay the point at Penn State with no job. Like, I don't know how's Penn State can score. They haven't been able to run the ball all year long. Now you have Dotson out. It feels like an under game for me because I would think the Penn State defense is still going to show up and come to play. And I know it's kind of a big game for Penn State with the way their season went, losing some close games to end the year and have opportunities to win some games. But, 48 rather, I would look at going under here, under 48, and kind of stay away from the side, being that this thing is cross zero.
Yeah, I think the opt-outs are big in this game, too. You mentioned Dotson. Penn State's best corner is also out. Arkansas's best receiver is out. this is my most hated thing of the bowl season is having to watch a 7-5 Big Ten team on New Year's Day. I'll just say that and leave it there. It's been a crutch in my life for my whole life is having to watch all these Big Ten and SEC teams have to play on my birthday every year. And it bothers me still when I'm going to be in my mid 40s.
You are a perpetual Christmas present, Steve.
No, my birthday present.
Yes.
Well, at least it's not Northwestern this year. I've woke up to too many Outback Bowls with Northwestern and whatever you have. But I think both these teams are motivated to play in this game. And you talked about it's a big spot for Penn State, knowing how their season's gone, Clifford coming back. And I want to see Arkansas against somebody different. You know, I went back and watched the Penn State Auburn game, and man, did Auburn have chances in that game. And I know it's early in the year, a lot of things change. And you look what Auburn did to Arkansas. Arkansas is a totally different team now than they were, you know, middle of the season when they played. So I would lean Arkansas in this game in its totality. I think it's a big spot for their program down the road. When you look, I don't know how much better it'll get than a possibly a 9-4 season for Sam Pittman in Fayetteville. I think they're happy with that. Maybe, you know, down the, you pull off an upset or a game you're not supposed to win in years coming, you know, whether it's going to be against a highly ranked A&M team or a highly ranked Bama team. You already beat A&M this year, but you know, that hurdle obviously in your division's Alabama, but I think this is a great opportunity for Arkansas to show what they got. And I'll go Arkansas in that game. Fiesta Bowl, 1 o'clock, very early out in Arizona. Interested to see this happened with what Washington and Penn State when they played. That was like the early.
They played in an afternoon game too.
Yeah right.
I don't think it was quite that early.
Yeah,
but it was definitely an afternoonish game.
Yeah, so you're looking at what I don't know, Arizona. I never know what time.
2 hours, probably, right?
Two hours. Yeah, that's right. That would be my guess.
I got confused between the two and the three deal as well. I thought it was two.
I love what Gundy said. If we have to find 11 guys to play, we are playing this game. I love that mindset and everything he brings to the table. Notre Dame's got some big opt-outs and injuries that are going to keep guys out. Fire up to see what the new head coach brings to the table. I think he's going to have his guys ready to go. Obviously, I'm interested to see how his demeanor on the sideline. You know, you hear everything positive about Coach Freeman. He's buttoned up. He knows all the right things to say to, you know, get his defense motivated. Now he does it for his team. I would imagine Tommy Rees is going to have a lot more say in the offense, even though he already does have a ton of say in the offense. So it's a cool dynamic to see what Notre Dame is going to look like going in the future. I like with no Kyron Williams, I think that's huge for Notre Dame's offense. I love the kid. I love watching him play, and I'm sad I'm not going to be able to see that. And I don't know what to expect from their offense without him in it. That's my biggest question about this game.
It's an absolute 100% total pass for me. Based on the Gundy comments, like who the heck knows, A, who's going to be out there for Oklahoma State, and B, the mindset after coming so close to potentially having a playoff chance or winning a Big 12 title against an Notre Dame team without its best offensive player and its best defensive player. This is a pass for me. Sorry, I don't got much more than that.
No, I'm with you. But you know what? Like, I guess it's just a weird thing about me. I don't have a side on the game, but I'm really interested to watch this game.
Me too.
Because I have no idea how it's going to play out. And sorry if you don't like that take. Later on that day, the greatest day of the year.
Your birthday. It's also my late grandfather's birthday too.
Happy birthday, Gramps. Iowa, Kentucky, 1 o'clock. Oh, not later that day. It's also kicking off the same time. Notre Dame, Oklahoma State's on ESPN. Iowa, Kentucky, Citrus Bowl, ABC. Kentucky -3, over under 44.
Yeah, you want to and lay 3 points with Kentucky here?
What's that?
You want to lay 3 points with Kentucky here?
No. I haven't seen an opt-out deal. I'm curious to see if all Kentucky's guys on defense play. You know, Pascal obviously has a future in the next level. I haven't seen anything.
I think Goodson's the only one I've seen from Iowa who's opted out, right?
Okay. Yeah, I lean Iowa here with the points. This is surprising to me. That's a higher over under than what was the low one? Oh, the Wisconsin's 41 and the Las Vegas Bowl is 41. This one's 44. I think 21 points wins this game.
Yeah, I would say somewhere between 21 and 24 would be, you could sign me up for that and I'd be good.
Yeah, I like Iowa, maybe in-game teaser, Iowa and the under.
In-game teaser.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Get that in before the
game. What's been Kentucky's biggest issue this year is turning the ball over.
Yes.
What is Iowa capitalized on more than any other team out there? It's creating turnovers, putting teams in bad situations to capitalize on mistakes. And turnovers aren't necessarily predictive and you don't think they're going to happen, but they always seem to do when Iowa's involved. So mm-hmm. plus three, I'm going to take the Hawkeyes.
Yeah. I'm going
to sacrifice and open myself up to the wrath of the Kentucky head coach, who I'm sure will give me a hard time once he sees and hears that.
I'll just say this. I know it's hard for people to get out of your mind what Iowa looked like the last time you saw him. And that's why I think people are just going to blindly take Kentucky, you know. But I was done well in plenty of spots in bowl games where they weren't that outmatched talented. Talent wise. And I think this is one of those circumstances. So I like Iowa plus the points in that one. The Granddaddy, 5:00 Eastern, ESPN. You'll be there. Obviously the opt-outs for Ohio State have been announced. Major, major names. The line is down to 4.5, 64, doing some radio out in Utah. They're already out in LA. They're all in. I saw some things where they're even buying Ohio State tickets. I would expect a huge, huge contingent of Utah people there. And that can only help them because they're going to need it. A la Cincinnati and Alabama, this is a matchup that I look at. I know some of the guys are out for Ohio State, but Utah hasn't seen anything like this offense. I don't care who Ryan Day plugs in there to take off the opt-outs. I think he's the best player caller in the sport. I've said it time and time again. But Utah is going to bring their game to the table. And can they match up and game plan for it, knowing what they have? The defense has just wrecked havoc over undermanned offenses in the Pac-12. And that's the matchup here for me. Utah, I believe, will figure things out eventually offensively against that Ohio State defense. But how long can Utah hold up defensively? That's what it comes down to for me in this game.
Yeah, I'd be careful here. If you missed the number on Utah, I certainly wouldn't take 4.5. Now, it's crazy to think that you've got all those opt-outs for Ohio State and you still have Jackson Smith and Jigba. You've got Marvin Harrison. You've got Trevion Henderson. You've got C.J. Stroud. Like, that's a pretty good hand to take into the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder now if it's an opportunity for these younger Ohio State players and some of these other positions to really make a name for themselves. Like, I'm strongly considering laying the 4.5 with Ohio State in this game just because, like, their talent level is still – through the roof. And I think kind of everybody's expecting Utah to win this game now that Ohio State has those guys out and to be excited about being there. And you kind of hit on it. I just don't think the Pac-12 was very good this year at all. And what Utah did was awesome. And yes, I know Oregon went to Columbus earlier in the year and won, but I don't know, man. I get a feeling here that Ohio State's going to show up just because of the respect that I know you and I both have for Ryan Day and the players that that are going to be there. They take nothing away from Utah, what they did winning the Pac-12, rallying. Devin Lloyd is awesome. But Ohio State's got a lot more Devin Lloyds than Utah has.
Yeah. I want to say I couldn't be happier for Utah. 11 years in the conference, and they've been close, closer to bigger things. But to finally get to this point is awesome to see. And I think the world of Coach Witt at Utah and what they brought, you know they're going to bring that toughness. And to me, like I said, how long can they hold up? This number feels high because I think if Utah's in the game, it's going to be low scoring. 64, it feels like a lot to me. So I would look at the under. I'm with you there. I think about the Ohio State skill guys that are going to be playing in this game and the confidence they're going to have, knowing they have the best play caller in the sport. And in my first game in Pasadena, and I'm probably going to be open a lot and I'm going to probably get some looks. That's got to be an awesome feeling. So we'll see about that. I would lean under in this game. I do. Utah's got to come out well. You know, they're not built to come back. You know, as we saw Ohio State almost do against Michigan, it's not that. They rely on that defense. And we'll see what happens there. 8:45 that night, the Sugar Bowl fired up. Baylor, Ole Miss -1.5, 55.5. And Ole Miss is a team that if you bet their overs this year, you lost you lost a lot of money. And this is interesting to me because of the matchup. I love that Corral's playing. I think this is an enormous spot for him that could boost him all the way to being the first quarterback taken in the draft. I know people that are out there and already think that. But I love the idea that he's playing. Lebby's going to coach in this game, which I think is a huge deal for Ole Miss. And on the other side, you got the ultimate preparer. Aranda is a guy that looks at this as a great opportunity. I would lean the over in this game, even though Ole Miss is involved and their numbers have been inflated all year.
And this is another game I probably won't have a play on, even though I'm sure I might have to throw something up on the board or else I get yelled at.
Yeah, you
will. I'm really looking forward to this game, though. Like,
yeah, me too.
I've gone back and forth on this one, and the college football fan in me is rooting for Ole Miss just because of Corral play. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see him be rewarded and Ole Miss rewarded for him playing, for Lebby staying and calling the plays. So I can see, and that defense has played well. Baylor winning the Big 12 is an amazing accomplishment. They got to the Sugar Bowl a couple years ago. Didn't go well against Georgia, who should have been in the playoff, but that's a conversation for another time. But I think if I had to play this game right now, I'll be leaning towards Ole Miss.
Okay, I'm with you there. I do look at that. Oh, I love Grimes on the other side calling plays for Baylor. And what they did in the Big 12 title game was awesome. And I think they're going to be riding pretty darn high off of that win. So I expect them to play well. I just feel like I know more about Ole Miss because of the idea with Corral getting the snaps. Mm-hmm. And that's why, I mean, we mentioned Lebby's name. He's the offensive coordinator for Ole Miss. He's going out Oklahoma to take over the same job. And he's an Oklahoma guy. But I think it's really cool that he's staying to coach this game. And it tells you what kind of kid I think Matt Corral is. So I think it's a real high-level game. I'm pumped that it's the last game of New Year's Day as opposed to, unfortunately, what we're getting in the Peach Bowl, which was a game I was really fired up for originally. But yeah, I like Ole Miss and over in this one. And then Tuesday, January 4th, LSU, Kansas State, the Texas Bowl. If you have a thought, go. I do not.
I mean, it's got to be Kansas State or pass, right? Yeah. Like, why is the number only 3.5 with an LSU team that who knows what they're going to do?
I don't know how they're practicing.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have enough players at times during the regular season, and they've got key opt-outs. I almost wonder if by the time this day of the game rolls around, if they're going to have enough players to play. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's got to be Kansas State or pass.
I'm with you. I'm with you there. That's just looking at it and knowing what's there. I mean, there's talks about LSU might play having to play a wide receiver at quarterback, and there's a deal with Nussmeier and his red shirt and just a bunch of stuff going on. I don't know, like, who's coaching the game for them. You know, Woodward, or I believe Woodward came in the locker room after the A&M game and told Coach O that was it. So he could, I mean, he's not even around.
Not even there.
Is the most master motivator that he is.
Big Mike Happy Recap.
The Big Mike Happy Recap. You start, sir.
I will go Pitt, Michigan State over. Mm-hmm. I will go Arizona State team total under. Give me Georgia. Give me Cincinnati team total under. Give me Penn State, Arkansas under. Give me Iowa. And give me the Ohio State University.
Okay. I will take Wisconsin minus the 6, Alabama minus the 13.5, maybe have the over in the column. I do like Arkansas also. I'm with you on Iowa. I'll take the under in the Rose Bowl. And Ole Miss in the over. I'm not sure both will make the column there. So get back to your busy day down in South Florida, sir.
I will have to actually have a couple other little things I need to do. I got to head over to the stadium and knock out the daily wager stuff this afternoon. And then I'll come back and probably.
What's for dinner?
That's what I was just thinking about. I don't know what's going to be.
Is the word prime a possibility?
No. Being up at Hollowell here, it's a little too far. Okay. I went to Billy's Stone Crabs.
Love Billy's.
Yeah, I went there last night with Larry Colmas, who's the racetrack announcer for the Triple Crown and longtime friend of mine. So it was good to see him. But yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. It might just be an order out type night and eat in and just watch the bowl games tonight.
Okay.
Kick back. I get a nice view of the ocean. So I might just open those sliders and hear the waves crash and fire the TV up and just kind of do a little DoorDash or Uber Eats or Grubhub or something like that.
All right. You mentioned a little horse racing. There is a track close to you. But how about the effort out of Flatline?
No, he's a really super talented sprinter. He's only run a few times, so clearly there are some issues with Flatline, but he is a freaky fast horse. And
wow,
I guess the question now for racing fans is, will we see him how many times before the Met Mile, which I would assume would be the next logical spot for him? Maybe we'll see him once before that, but yeah, he's a freak, and it'll hopefully he can stay healthy for the course of the year. And we can see him in the Breeders' Cup and up at Saratoga this year.
Or
Del Mar. John Saddle normally doesn't ship to Saratoga. So something tells me he'll probably be Del Mar based for or West Coast based.
Okay.
For most of the year. Maybe Kentucky if there's a race for him Derby weekend. But yeah, that was okay. An awesome race. And yeah, now we're getting to the time where the 2-year-olds are about to turn 3, and the obviously a ton of storylines around the Derby this year with the Bob Baffert 3-year-olds who none of them are getting points right now because of the ongoing look into the Derby result from last year. And so we'll see ultimately what happens with that. So that, like, Corniche is a really talented horse, but he would have to change trainers right now in order to start getting points towards the Derby. So yeah, that's certainly an interesting story to follow along as we get going here on the Triple Crown Trail with some of these 3-year-old Derby prep races coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's I think I'm going to put this on you for the year 2022. You know how you could set your alerts on the ESPN app? Like, whenever the Islanders mm-hmm. play, you can get a
yes.
You can get a text about, mm-hmm. you know, the score. I need the horse updates when certain horses are going to race. I need that, those alert. I need alerts. Oh, yeah,
that's your stable mail, daily racing form. You can put in a horse in the stable mail.
Yeah.
And whenever they are entered, you will receive a notification. Yes.
Okay. So all right. I got to do that. That's my New Year's resolution.
Good for you.
I have been finding myself driving over to Virginia to plant some apps in this holiday season.
Attaboy. And, you know what I found out yesterday? I was sitting around in Bradley getting ready for the to leave in Connecticut. Yep. And I wound up firing in some Coach of the Year stuff. Mm. And I got 35-1 on Flores. I got 750 on Zach Taylor. And I played Vrabel, I think, at like 12-1, just because I didn't think that Matt LaFleur should be plus 175. Okay. And I tweeted that out. And of course, every Packers fan in the world disagreed with me in a shocking development. A good handicapper friend of mine sent me a DM saying, totally agree with you. The two people I bet were Zach Taylor and Nick Sirianni. I'm like, I didn't even think of Sirianni. And he laid out a really good case for Sirianni, who was 65-1. Mm-hmm. So I send a text message to a buddy of mine who lives in Virginia. And he's like, I can't play it. We can't bet on awards in Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I guess because it's technically a vote. I don't know. I guess they have to stand there. Their high moral ground there to disallow voting on awards. So I was able to contact another buddy of mine
who was the proper people
able to help me out. So yeah, I wound up betting Sirianni at 65-1 as well. And then that comeback player of the year stuff. Like I couldn't believe, like when I'm going through this, I'm like, why is Dak like -625 to win this thing? He's a Cowboy. Everybody loves, well, not everybody loves the Cowboys, but one of the more popular teams out there. But like,
way to put it.
Burrow leads the league in like yards per attempt. He's second behind Aaron in quarterback rating. He's got a better QBR than Dak. He's got averages more yards per drop. Like the numbers kind of support Burrow based on like where they were supposed to be. They both had horrific injuries, but like I'm sure Dak will win, but I don't think it should be priced like a complete slam dunk.
I think more criteria needs to be put in that comeback player of the year. Like they both played in the season last year. And they kind of young guys to be winning comeback player of the year, you know, like let's have like 6 years in the league at least in order to win comeback player of the year. Speaking of, you can bet futures in Virginia, and I'll just tell you now, bet the Warriors to win the NBA title. Just do it right now. Just do it. They're going to win it.
Do you think I'm sure it's already baked in the price of the just knowing that Clay's coming back, yes. Right?
Yeah, I got 6.5-1, and I'll take that.
I'm going to bet the Lakers.
Before the – oh, God, do not do that.
no,
actually,
I'm not
actually if I'm you not really want Lakers. Money to I'm throw away, the now's Lakers. The time. Now's the time. I did get Warriors at 11-1 before the season, so I still think it's worth it. I've not really been excited for something more to see in the NBA than to see Clay come back. He's the best. I can't wait to see him. And I think they're going to be phenomenal when he comes back because they've done a really good job of building that roster and getting guys that could score. And that's what you got to do in this league. But that's our NBA breakdown. I'm taking enough of your time. You got things to do. I have to go wrangle a bunch of kids. And that's not what I'm
looking for. You have fun with that.
Oh yeah, we hope I got some boxes of mac and cheese left to cook for lunch. Let's just put it that way. That's the only time it's quiet is when they're eating.
Now do you cut up some hot dogs and put like little hot dogs in the mac and
cheese? No, they like it all separate. They like their hot dogs on the grill, some Martin's potato rolls, and then the old mac and cheese. So we will get that done now. I'm probably going to get yelled at because it is past our normal lunchtime, and now there's more people involved, so there's more people being mad at me. So it's all good.
I'll never be mad at you, Steve.
We got like 10 days, I think, till we get to see each other in Indianapolis. Pumped for that.
Awesome.
We're doing dinner Sunday night. Get it ready.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Totally.
All right. You're the man. I'll talk to you soon. Behave down there in your old stomping grounds.
I will. Less you bet, more you lose when you win.
You can listen or follow the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Plus, don't miss more from Stanford Steve on ESPN SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. And check out the Bear on College Game Day on ESPN.